Good morning. You are listening to the Local News Hour on this Monday, June 29th. I'm Grace Dorfler, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on the show this morning. It is a chilly morning in Old Town Park City, partly cloudy skies and 40 degrees with a high of 66 this afternoon. We should see more sunshine through the rest of the day. It's 45 degrees and sunny in the Heber Valley with a high of 72 this afternoon. With details about the weather forecast across the Wasatch Back is ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for this Monday. Boy, are we waking up to some chilly conditions out there. We've got a couple of valley rain and, yes, even high mountain snow showers rolling through. Those will last for a few hours during the morning. Then we should dry out by mid-morning into the afternoon hours. More sunshine returns as well. Temperatures will climb into the mid-60s there for us in Park City today. We'll look at high temperatures in the low 70s in the Heber Valley. And yes, these temperatures will be running about some 10 to 15 degrees below average for this time of the year. Now, as we make our way into your Tuesday, we're going to be looking at partly cloudy skies. Again, a very slim chance of a spotty shower rolling through, but overall, I think we're dry. Temperatures climbing into the low 70s up towards Park City. We'll be in the upper 70s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Wednesday, look for lots of sunshine, a few high, thin clouds out there as well. Temperatures, once again, warming into the mid to upper 70s for us in Park City. We'll be climbing into the low 80s in the Heber Valley. But you'll notice during this time a brief little bit of a warm-up each and every day with just a mixture of clouds and sunshine. The winds will start to pick back up again as we go into your Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So that's going to lead to that elevated, if not critical, fire danger threat returning to the state. So again, high fire dangers we get towards the second half of the week. But we do expect to see more sunshine in place, and that means mostly sunny skies for your Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Again, high temperatures in the upper 70s in Park City. Will be in the low 80s in the Heber Valley for your Wednesday. We'll be around 80 for a high temperature in Park City on your Thursday afternoon, with highs around the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. And then as we get towards your Friday, mostly sunny skies, but the heat will be on. Low 80s for us in Park City for high temperatures. Will be in the upper 80s in the Heber Valley. And right now, the all-important 4th of July forecast on Saturday looks like lots of sunshine, highs in the low to mid-80s in Park City, and highs around 90 in the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
In terms of traffic across the Wasatch Back, things are moving relatively smoothly so far this morning. I'll let you know if that changes over the course of the next hour. There are some minor slowdowns to report in areas that you might expect. If you are driving eastbound on I-80 towards the US 40 exit to go towards Heber, there's some minor delays there. Additionally, in Wasatch County, there's a little bit of a slowdown along Deer Creek Reservoir. That's on northbound US 189. Apart from that, as I say, things are moving relatively quickly across the region for the moment. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, first we will hear from the Wasatch Fire District Chief Eric Hales and Fire Warden Troy Morgan. They have the updates on fireworks bans across the state ahead of the July 4th holiday and other fire safety updates. After that, Recycle Utah's Chelsea Hafer and Kim Flores, the founder and owner of Fulfilled, a sustainable store in Summit County, will join the show to talk about plastic-free July. And just to note that Recycle Utah is a financial supporter of KPCW. And finally, to round out the hour, Marge Bowen, the co-president of the Midway Art Association, has a preview of this week's Midway Plein Air Paradise, a painting competition and tradition in Wasatch County. The Park City Council approved an 18% pay bump for itself and the mayor in a split 3-2 vote Thursday. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the raises are part of the $240 million fiscal year 2027 budget.
After months of conversation, community pushback, and a course correction, Park City Council members settled on a salary bump in next year's budget, but not unanimously. The pay hike passed 3-2 Thursday as part of the city's $240 million fiscal year 2027 budget. Council members Ed Parisian and Bill Sirocco voted no. Parisian felt the raise was too high, even at 18%.
Well, if I don't feel comfortable getting the raise, I might as well vote no on just a little bit of raise, because it still was over the number that I thought I was signing up for.
At 18%, council member salaries will rise from nearly $29,000 to over $34,000. The mayor's salary will increase from more than $55,000 to almost $66,000. The increase replaces a May 21st ordinance that more than doubled council and mayor salaries. Sirocco voted no on both raises. He's advocated for a pay bump of no more than 10%, arguing the position is a service rather than a full-time job. Council members Tana Tolley, Molly Miller, and Diego Zagara supported more hefty increases. They said the current pay limits the job to wealthy or retired people and requires a more than 40-hour work week. Due to split opinions on raises, the council agreed to revisit the issue this fall. Parisian said the process will involve public feedback. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, joining me in the studio are leaders from the Wasatch Fire District. We have Fire Chief Eric Hales and Fire Warden Troy Morgan here in the studio with me. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Grace.
Good morning, Grace. Thanks for having us.
Thanks. So we are just a few days away from the 4th of July, and fireworks, as I understand, are banned everywhere in Wasatch County, in towns everywhere. Chief, could you start out and share a little bit about, you know, why this ban is so important?
Well, yeah, last week was quite a week for Wasatch Fire District and our county. It started actually the Friday before when we went into stage one fire restrictions in Wasatch County. And then as the week progressed, we started hearing rumblings that the state was going to move to stage two fire restrictions. And then when the governor had his news conference, he basically issued the statewide ban on fireworks. And he did give municipalities an option of designating areas to light off fireworks. So in Wasatch County, we have seven municipalities. So we reached out to all the legislative bodies to try to determine what the best approach would be. Several of them, such as Hideout, Independence, Interlochen, they never allow fireworks anyway. Mm-hmm. But those other ones like Midway and Heber, you know, we worked really closely with the mayor and councils to determine whether or not we could identify areas we could safely let off fireworks. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we decided with those groups that there was no area to do that.
Yeah, and that includes the professional fireworks show that Midway usually puts on even.
Yes, and that was early on. And speaking with the leadership of Midway City, you know, Midway is growing so rapidly. And there's so many new developments popping up very close to that venue of Memorial Hill that we had to look really closely at that.
Yeah, you don't want to take any chances.
Not at all.
And what are the penalties if you violate the ban?
Right now, it's a Class B misdemeanor, so it's up to a $1,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail. You know, and yes, there's going to be an enforcement piece to that, and we're working really closely with our law enforcement partners of both Heber, Midway Police, as well as the Sheriff's Office. Mm-hmm. We actually have a meeting this afternoon with Sheriff Rigby and Chief Sever on what the best approach will be.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
I think the other thing people need to realize is it's not just a fine and or jail time. If they do start a fire, they will be held liable for any and all suppression cost and any damages related to the fire, which we know these catastrophic wildfires can be in the tens of millions of dollars. So it's really just not worth taking the chance.
Yeah, and it's not just a little $1,000 fine either.
You're going to be held responsible for all the suppression cost that it takes to put out the fire.
Wow, yeah. So be safe out there, everybody.
Yes, definitely.
I want to talk a little bit about Heber City. There was some back and forth. There was an emergency meeting on Thursday where they thought about doing fireworks and then they walked it back. Could you maybe share a little bit about what was kind of happening behind the scenes?
Well, what was going on there? Because like I said, last week was very dynamic. I believe that the day of that meeting was actually the same day as Governor Cox's press conference. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I like how the city got together and they were able to get the council members and the mayor together to discuss. And we did have city staff look for areas within the city limits that we possibly could use or ignite, you know, consumer fireworks. And what happened was, as we identified places we were comfortable with, both of which the areas were either with the county event center or the school district, neither of which were under the auspice or control of the city. So as we discussed that, and then we also knew that if we were the only area to light off fireworks in the Wasatch back, we would have had a lot of our friends and neighbors from surrounding areas coming into our area. And logistically, that could have been very difficult for us all, from public works to law enforcement to the fire district. So we ended up banning all fireworks.
Understood. Now, that being said, people might still be seeing fireworks stands around town. Why is that the case?
So legally, they cannot ban the sale of fireworks. Mm-hmm. So like the governor said at his press conference, that we want to make sure we're supporting small business and stuff like that. We don't want to hinder anybody's livelihood, for sure. Mm-hmm. We understand that it's an impact, but legally you cannot prevent the sale of fireworks. And like the governor said, if you go out, buy the fireworks, there's other times, you know, New Year's Eve, that can be, you can discharge fireworks. He also did say that, you know, if we needed to do something in November, I don't know if that'll be the case or not, but yeah, so don't be too hard on the fireworks stands. They a lot of them have contracts and have to be opened, mm-hmm. you know, due to their contracts.
Yeah, so people can still buy them. They just can't set them off until it's safe to do so.
At least in Wasatch County.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I believe a firework ban is kind of the default except around holidays like the 4th and Pioneer Day. So what will happen for Pioneer Day later this summer?
I think that is still yet to be determined. Obviously, you know, yes, we've had a few, you know, a little cooler temperatures and a little moisture come through. I do not think that's done enough to make a difference or move the needle at all. But it is something that we continually look at. That's one of the reasons why we initially didn't go into stage one fire restrictions as early as, say, Summit County. As we were continually working, we met as a command staff with our folks to determine every week, you know, what's our next step and should we move into those restrictions. And once we did, and we worked closely with Forestry, Fire, and State Lands and the state forester, and we went into the stage one, and shortly after we were in stage two.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about what else is banned now that we're in stage two besides fireworks.
So with stage two fire restrictions, no open flame at all. You can't have any campfires outside. You can't do any like charcoal burning. It has to have a valve that you can turn off the flame pretty much. So any liquid propane, fire pits, barbecues, they're allowed. You can't weld or grind in any outdoor areas with dry vegetation. Spark arrestors have to be put on, chainsaws, motor vehicles, which typically those have. No smoking outside of your vehicle, no parking on dry vegetation.
Okay, anything that could throw a spark?
Yes,
yeah.
Anything that could cause a fire.
Makes sense. How dangerous are conditions in Wasatch County and the Wasatch Back overall right now?
Lower elevation in your lighter, flashier fuels is extreme right now. It's not going to take much to get a fire started and going fairly quickly. Your higher elevation, obviously, and your heavy timber and stuff, we're still seeing some good fuel moistures up there. So, but it's the lower elevations that are a concern for us right now.
Yeah. Chief, could you maybe speak, or either of you, could you speak a little bit to what kind of work goes on behind the scenes heading into a really busy fire season like this one? Like, what kind of coordination do you do with state and federal agencies, other fire districts?
Well, whether it's a, you know, extreme fire year like it is this year or just a normal year, every year we prepare our crews for wildland season. It's unfortunate, but we do have several wildfires in Wasatch County every year. It's just a given. So we ensure that our crews receive their annual certification, their red card training. We ensure that all our agreements with our neighboring partners, with forestry, fire, and state lands, the surrounding fire districts, we have those mutual and automatic aid agreements all set. And then we actually begin with some training evolution, so we make sure that we are ready when it does happen. So pretty much that's how we spend our spring every year. Mm-hmm. And this year we're ensuring that if on red flag days we're trying to upstaff and put an additional engine in service during the daytime hours, mm-hmm. to kind of help not only patrol but help with those firefighting resources so we can increase our staffing.
Okay.
We also have a fuel management crew that we train up and get certified for wildfire. So when they're not doing project work, they can assist on these high fire days. And, you know, if we do have a fire, that's a few more bodies that we can pull and utilize.
Makes sense. Yeah. What about for residents? Like, what's the best way for them to know what the current restrictions are, what the danger is out there?
The biggest thing is to stay informed, and to, you know, we put information on our website, we put information out on social media, but also we Chief Morgan and his seasonal staff and our other prevention staff have worked you know quite a bit with HOAs and various private homeowners to help educate them. Because as we go into the fire season, we want to ensure that everyone is prepared. Mm-hmm. And we can prepare by making sure that our homes are ready, that we're clearing up vegetation, we have a defensible space around our homes, especially those homes that are in within the wildland urban interface. Mm-hmm. And that's why we employ a seasonal chipping crew to kind of help not only private residences, but these HOAs with some of these fuel management and fuel mitigation projects that mm-hmm. they have.
Mm-hmm. Like I've seen you doing a lot of outreach in Hideout, for example, where all the homes are really in that wildland urban interface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we try to get out and just do a lot of education, like Chief Hales was mentioning. And, you know, we do offer that chipping program. It's a free service to anybody that lives in the wildland urban interface areas. We encourage people to go on our website, sign up. We'll send a crew out there and we'll, you know, help them. We felt like, as command staff, that, you know, we can preach all we can, but we really want to help mitigate the situation. So Chief Hell's credit, he was able to secure some funding and implement this program, which has been great.
Awesome. And I think it's worth mentioning as well, I think people can sign up for emergency alerts too.
Absolutely. And that was something else I was going to say is, as we are preparing, not only preparing our homes, but we are preparing for wildfire and possible evacuations, a lot of that is being informed. In Wasatch County, you can get on the Wasatch County Emergency Management website and sign up for an Everbridge alert. Mm-hmm. In Summit County, you're able to do, you know, very similar thing to ensure that you're getting timely information. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we will ensure is that in an emergency, we will get those alerts out on those platforms. We'll get them out on social media. We'll also get them out through you and mm-hmm. with KPCW, because, you know, you guys can really help us get that message out there. So I think with that collaborative effort, mm-hmm. We can inform the folks within our surrounding communities.
Yeah, and I believe the link for that Everbridge sign up is on the county's emergency page.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for Wasatch County.
Are there other steps that you recommend locals take? I don't know if it's packing a go bag or, you know, doing other things to be prepared in case of emergency this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Being prepared, like you're preparing your home for wildfire, making sure you have defensible space, getting the dead and down vegetation from around your homes. We also want you to prepare to ensure that you have a 72-hour kit, mm-hmm. and you have those important documents, medications, and so forth, that you are able to leave. We, like many agencies, follow that ready, set, go mm-hmm. Mentality. So, you know, the ready piece is when you're preparing, you know, not only your home, but all your belongings. belongings. Set is once you've received the alert, you're preparing to leave. And then go is just immediately go. Mm-hmm. And if you can be ahead of the curve and not have to have the law enforcement or the fire officials come through and have to kind of force you out, if you can actually leave when the order's in place, it makes it so much easier for those of us responding mm-hmm. to those areas to focus on the task at hand and not have to, because life safety is our number one. So if we can remove that component of it, then we can focus on fighting the fire and protecting the homes.
Yeah. Any other preparedness tips you would add?
No, that's pretty much it. Just clearing that vegetation, you know, around the structures is crucial. I always tell people, you know, help me help you. I want to make sure we can do everything we can to protect your home, your structure. We understand how important it is, but we also need to look at that life safety, especially for the firefighters. So the more you can do before a fire comes, the more we're going to be able to do to protect your home.
Makes sense. Well, heading into the holiday weekend, any other reminders you want to leave residents with?
Well, the biggest thing is we hope that everyone follows the fireworks ban and finds other ways to celebrate. We understand that, yes, we are coming up on the 250-year anniversary of this country, and celebration is a huge part of it. If we can just incorporate all the pieces that involve family, friends, neighbors, and the celebrating, and just leave out the fireworks piece, I think we'll have a very wonderful and fantastic holiday weekend.
Sounds good. Well, thank you both so much for being here this morning.
Okay.
Thank you for having us.
We've been talking with Fire Chief Eric Hales and Fire Warden Troy Morgan from the Wasatch Fire District. In the studio with me are Recycle Utah's Chelsea Hafer and Kim Flores, who's the owner and founder of Fulfilled, which is a sustainable lifestyle store here in Summit County. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for being here. Chelsea, I want to start with you and hear a little bit about Zero Waste Wasatch Back. I understand this is kind of an effort to live more sustainably. Can you kind of give an overview of what this group is all about?
Yeah, so it definitely was a huge partnership. Kimberly and I and some other really involved people in the community who have experience in zero waste initiatives across the country have been talking about this, I feel like, for at least a year now. I think really what pushed us off to get this really started was when the Zero Waste Forum came here in April, and we wanted to really have something that we could offer to Summit County Wasatch Back residents after the forum left, because I think that started a lot of momentum. So we just had our second meeting a week ago, and we are super excited. We have some really, really engaged people with really cool backgrounds. We have people with all different sorts of sustainability backgrounds. So we're really trying to get people interested in doing zero waste in their own personal lives, and then also doing community-wide initiatives that we're all working on together. So there's been really cool discussion. And we'll talk more about what our meeting will look like for this next month. But there are free meetings, and anyone who's interested in learning more about zero waste, anywhere on your zero waste journey, you can check out our website, because we'd love to have people from all different kinds of experience levels with waste.
How can you sign up?
You don't need to sign up. You can just show up at our meetings. They're all on our website, recycleutah.org/zero waste.
Nice. And how often do you meet?
We're meeting once a month right now, and we're still figuring out what the structure looks like. So far, we've just been kind of discussing what we want our community initiatives to look like, discussing different personal challenges that we've had. Last month, before this meeting that we had last week, we invited people to do kind of a waste audit of their own trash can. What kind of stuff is going in your trash can? Specifically, what kind of plastic waste are you generating? And then bring that to the group, because some people might have ideas on how to reduce that, how to avoid that. And they did. I mean, people are so creative with the ways that that they're avoiding waste. We have a woman who's an artist in our group, and she just fully got rid of her trash can. And so she has this little basket of tiny pieces of trash that she's trying to find homes for, because she is not putting anything in the trash. And if she can't find a home for something, she's putting it into art that she's making. So yeah, people are really creative. And I think that's a really cool part of this group, is everyone has an idea that you've never thought of how to reduce your waste at home.
Yeah, crowdsourcing sustainability.
For sure.
Love to hear it. You mentioned plastic waste. That's a great segue to talk a little bit about Plastic-Free July. Kim, could you talk maybe a little bit about what, like, how did this get started, this Plastic-Free July movement?
Yeah, secondary to our favorite Earth Month in April, and Earth Day is Plastic-Free July. It's like our big holiday at Fulfilled Lifestyle Co. And it really is an opportunity for people to rethink what they're using in their life. For those of us, you know, more sustainably minded, we're in full-on zero waste groups, but for others, it gives us an opportunity to really think how single-use plastic plays a role in their everyday life. So this was started by an Australian woman, I think, 7 or more years ago. Now we have 170 million people from 190 countries taking part. And the impact, as you can imagine, is huge. Mm-hmm. So we're asking people to just rethink things. And it can start small with things that you use every day. Mm-hmm. Your coffee cup, bringing a reusable one. Your water bottle, mm-hmm. remembering to take your reusable bags to the grocery store. Refusing plastic straws. Or single-use plastic cutlery. So, one good way, again, is to do that waste audit at home and find those pieces, like, is there another alternative that I could use instead of this? And so Plastic-Free July just kind of gamifies that process. Yeah. So we've actually created a Plastic-Free July bingo. You can find a bingo card at Recycle Utah or at Fulfilled Lifestyle Co. And once you get a bingo, you can bring it in for 20% off, because going plastic-free is really one of the reasons why Fulfilled Lifestyle Co. exists. We offer most everything that's on that card, from swapping to a safety razor or swapping to a bar instead of liquid soap, coming in for a refill, again, refusing those single-use items that I just mentioned. So, mm-hmm.
I know your professional life is kind of centered around sustainability and reducing waste. When people come in and you're chatting with folks about, like, kind of starting down this path of sustainability, what are some of the ways plastic shows up that is maybe more, like, most surprising, or people don't realize how big of an impact it has to have that much plastic?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one thing that we are very clear on is that we want to welcome everyone, no matter where they are on their journey. So if you've walked in and you've never heard of a zero waste lifestyle or what it even means to be sustainable, we're there to help educate people on those small swaps that they can make. So some people I ask, well, where do you want to start? What do you think the problem is? And some people are like, oh my gosh, the Ziploc bags, mm-hmm. or, oh, we go through so many paper towels. And I'm like, well, let me show you a reusable option for those things. And I think we talked about this in the zero waste group. It's those pieces that, when we're not actually feeling prepared, that's when plastic waste kind of pops in and, like, oh, well, now I'm here at this event, or I forgot my cutlery. So different ways like that. We just want people to have an alternative, to have a way, and we want to offer the solution for when someone is interested in moving towards a more sustainable lifestyle, that they have a place that's local where they can go, not only for ideas, but for actionable steps.
How big of a deal is plastic pollution?
Well, you know, I don't know, Chelsea and I, we can talk about this, but there's something like 10 billion metric tons of plastic that's been created, and the plan is to continue to keep making plastics even the more people are moving away from it. And a majority of that has been landfilled. 12% has been incinerated, and the rest of it makes its way into the ocean. So plastics is one of those really hard to recycle things, and I know Chelsea knows that through and through.
Yeah, so plastic, it doesn't go away. If you recycle it, you can recycle it. Most of it you can't recycle. And then you recycle it. And then the hard thing about plastic is the quality degrades a ton every single time it's recycled, if it's even recycled. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, every piece of plastic that's ever been created is still around, which, you know, yeah. We just have no idea what the long-term effect is on our bodies, on the environment. It just hasn't been around very long. So. Mm-hmm.
And we know now, you know, we found it, more and more studies, we have it in our blood, we have it in our brain, we have it in our placentas, we have it in our, you know, snow on top of remote mountains. Mm-hmm. We know that the microplastics, which obviously what sheds from plastic, is a problem. And I think there is some confusion because plastics are made from so many different chemical makeups that people see that chasing triangles stamp that's been stamped on their piece of plastic and think, oh, this must be recyclable. But really all it tells you is what the chemical components of that plastic is. Mm-hmm. So not all things that have that chasing arrow symbol are recyclable. In fact, we mentioned, you know, some plastics are. There's a hierarchy of plastics. And HDPE, you think those really hard jugs, your milk jugs, things like that, that is like the, that's the top of the list of can be recycled, but it just gets downgraded. Once it's recycled, it just gets made into less and less plastic until you get to the point where you've got your soft film or your single-use water bottles, those things. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is good for is waste energy at that point.
Wow. And you think about plastic bags, and yeah, maybe they're all number four, but the amount of different chemical compositions of LDPE is, there's thousands of different makeups of it, so you can't even try and begin to like recycle, sort it into what the specific kinds of LDPE are. So yeah, I think something else I'll mention while we're on this is just none of us are perfect. Kim and I both use plastic. You can't avoid plastic. It's really, really hard. But what we're here to encourage people to do is think about what's the easiest. Mm-hmm. And if you know what plastic waste is making up your trash or recycling bin, what's the most that you're making? What's the most volume? And there's definitely solutions for, I would say, at least three quarters of it. So that's no one in our zero waste group doesn't use plastic completely, but we're all trying, and we're all trying to help each other move the needle a little bit.
There's definitely no shame. No shame here. I mean, we are in an economy that's just not meant to be circular.
Got it. Yeah, and you kind of alluded to there's a bingo card for people who want to get started with this. Where can people find that bingo card?
Yeah, soon I'm going to have it on the website. We have hard copies at Recycle Utah and Fulfilled Lifestyle Co. Yeah, go in, make a bingo, and bring it in, and you can get 20% off.
Excellent. In other Plastic Free July festivities, Chelsea, could you tell me a little bit about a film screening for people who really want to double down on their plastic knowledge?
Yeah, we have a film screening of The Plastic Detox on July 22nd at 6 p.m. at the Santee Auditorium. We are really excited. I've actually never seen the film, but Kim has seen the film.
This is the first plastic documentary that I've ever watched where I was crying happy tears at the end. And so this documentary is actually focused on infertile couples and their journey from removing plastic and other harmful chemicals from their life, and then the outcome of this, I think it's like a 90-day detox.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, we would love for people to join. Again, you don't need to sign up. It's free. And we'll have a short little discussion after there. But that's going to be our Zero Waste Wasatch Back meeting for July. Again, July 22nd. And the details are on our website, recycleutah.org /events. But we'd love people to join, and you can learn a little bit more about plastic.
Fantastic. I wonder what you would say to listeners who might be feeling a little bit overwhelmed, like, oh my goodness, there's so much plastic in the world. Where would you recommend getting started? You've talked a little bit about, you know, like Ziploc bags, things like that.
Yeah, start with what you're using every day. Again, I always suggest people start with an audit. Pull out your trash bin, pull out your recycling bin, find out what you make the most of, and make it a game. What is it that I can get rid of? Again, I pointed to the easiest ones, your coffee mug, you're bringing your water bottle, bringing your own bag to the grocery store. Those are low-hanging fruit that I think people can start there. And I think with swaps, once you make one and that becomes kind of routine in your home, it's very easy to make the next one. Mm-hmm. I say start in one room. What do you want to do? Is it a kitchen? Is it your bathroom? And, you know, I started in my bathroom, started mm-hmm. with my toothbrush, and then my first swap was solid bars. So everywhere mm-hmm. is a solid bar. There's no, even though I sell liquid, you know, non-toxic household cleaning and personal care products by the ounce, everything in my home is a bar. So that was an easy one, you know. And then it was the toilet paper I use, getting, you know, bamboo or recycled paper toilet paper so it doesn't have the PFAS in it. And then it was the safety razor, and then it was menstrual products. I mean, you can just, once you make one swap, it's very easy to see that you can make the next one. And in a lot of cases, you are spending a lot less money when you're focusing on reusables rather than disposables.
Yeah, makes sense. And it sounds like, I mean, I know you are, Chelsea, but it sounds like you also, Kim, are really passionate about educating people. And when people have questions, it sounds like you are both good resources.
Yeah, absolutely. You can reach out to Chelsea or I. Hit us up on Instagram, DM us, walk in. We love talking about waste and how to not create any.
You can bring a bin of plastic to Recycle Utah, too. Most of it, at this point, we can divert from the landfill. So if you have questions about specific plastic items, whether it's foam or plastic bags or straw, whatever, we can take almost everything at Recycle Utah if you do have that in your trash and you're trying to divert it.
Fantastic. Well, we're just about out of time, but is there anything either of you would like to add about plastic waste before I let you go?
I think the biggest thing is we're not here to shame you, and you shouldn't shame yourself. I think that as long as you have the intention of doing better, all you can do is, did I make the best decisions today? Yeah. And I think you start there.
Yeah, it's the small swaps. And stop by Fulfilled if you haven't been. It's an incredible store, and it makes it so easy for people.
Sounds good. Well, Kim and Chelsea, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Grace.
Thanks so.
We've been talking with Chelsea Hafer from Recycle Utah and Kim Flores from Fulfilled Lifestyle Co. Summit County is renaming Tech Center Drive with new development coming to Western Kimball Junction. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports council members are sticking with residents and rejected the developer's suggestion.
Summit County council members say they're sticking with Nordic Drive, residents' top choice in a survey about renaming Tech Center Drive. The previous development agreement for some land west of the Kimball Junction Library set the area aside for tech offices. But now Six Ridge Partners, formerly Dakota Pacific, will build housing there. Summit County and High Valley Transit are contributing taxpayer money to the project since it also includes a new transit center and other civic elements. The company is calling its project Altus Park City. It suggested the road name Altus Way, which Councilmember Tanya Hansen shot down Wednesday.
With how controversial this development has been, I am not interested in naming it Altus Way at all.
Thousands of county residents signed a petition aiming to block the development at the ballot box last year, the culmination of several years of lawsuits and heated debate. That was before the state legislature stepped in and effectively rezoned Six Ridge's land to move the project forward. The public hearing and vote to make the Nordic Drive name official has not been scheduled yet. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, on the phone with me is the co-president of the Midway Art Association, Marge Bowen. Marge, good morning.
Good morning, Grace.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me. How's the sound, okay?
It sounds great. You are here on the show, and Midway's annual Plein Air Paradise is underway. I understand the exhibition part starts tomorrow, so I guess for our listeners, could you maybe start by sharing a little bit about what Plein Air means?
I would be happy to do that. Plein Air is French for painting in the open air. So artists like to stop on location and paint, because what they're doing is they're capturing the true essence of natural light, shadow, and atmosphere. So there's no better learning of that than to be outside in the moment, because the shadows and the light changes so very quickly. So it kind of forces artists to really fine tune their skill by putting what they see on canvas.
Very cool. And so this has been kind of a longstanding tradition in Midway. How long have you been involved?
I have been involved for about 6 years. And the Midway Art Association, especially Plein Air, was started back in 2004 by Suzette Gertsch and her friends. And then that progressed until about 2012. And Renata Riggs was running the association. It's a nonprofit association. And Jerry Waterworth and Norma Bergner joined at that time, and then they kind of took over and ran it until last year. So Ginger Shell and I became co-presidents in 2026. Mm-hmm. And this is a volunteer-run event, and it's about a two-week event. And we have artists coming from all around the country. We have 134 artists.
Wow.
And that's about as much as we can handle, because once these artists are out on location painting, they bring all of their art, whatever they've entered. We have many different competitions in that two-week time for artists, and they can join what they want, basically. But anyway, they bring it all into Midway Town Hall, where it's on display, and then for sale, as you said, starting tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock.
Wow. So 134 artists, are they all amateurs? Are there any professionals? Like, who all takes part?
The majority of the artists are professionals. There is an amateur division, but the majority are professionals and very renowned artists from 9 different states this year, the furthest being away being Hawaii and Florida. Mm-hmm. But we have about 20 local artists from the Wasatch County and Midway-Heber area, and then we have more from the Wasatch Front, Ogden to Santaquin. We get them from all over. This is Midway, the plein air, the Midway Wasatch plein air paradise is actually really well known in the artist community. We have wonderful prizes and awards for them, and they love coming to our beautiful valley as well, of course.
Yes. Yeah, and there's no shortage of subjects to paint in the Heber Valley. Could you tell me maybe a little bit about what kind of categories artists compete in? I know there's different Heber and Midway paintouts and things
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. Yeah, we start with what's going on right now is the main, we call it the main competition. And artists can turn in 4 different pieces of art that they are painting in either Wasatch County or even Summit County. So that's the whole region that we allow them to paint when they compete in the main competition. And then we have the nocturne sunrise, so they can paint either a sunrise or a sunset. And that gets judged. All of these competitions get judged. That gets judged on Wednesday. Tomorrow, the main gets judged. And then we have the Heber paint out, and that they are painting on location east of Provo River in the Wasatch County, in Heber. And then we have the Midway paint out, where they're painting somewhere around Midway. Mm-hmm. Each one gets judged by a judge, and then they're awarded different prizes and things like that. And then it culminates on July 4th with what we call the quick draw. Now, that's not a competition. What happens with the quick draw is we invite about 32 artists to come and set up outside around Town Hall, and they are painting something from a photograph, more than likely. Not always, but usually it's from a photo, and they're starting with a blank canvas, and they have to finish with that piece of art framed in 2.5 hours.
Wow.
So it's wet paint, and we take those pieces of art into Town Hall, hang them on a grid, and then we auction them off. So it's a very popular and big auction that we have on July 4th after the quick draw painting.
Wow. Are there rules about what kind of medium you can use? Like, I imagine oil paint maybe would not be such a good idea for this.
Oh, no. The majority are painting with oil.
Really? I thought it...
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Yes. No, they're painting with oil, pastel, mm-hmm. Acrylic. There's some acrylic, but the majority is oil. But there's some artists start with acrylic and then layer oil paints on top of that.
Wow.
We also have... watercolor, and then we do have some ink art as well. This year we have kind of a tile mosaic art just being displayed that's beautiful. So, you know, it's fine art, so that's going to be a little different than when I say fine art, what I'm talking about is artists that have some experience and training with art. There aren't many amateurs. So that's why the majority are very experienced artists and have been selling art. And that's what we consider professional.
Wow. That's remarkable. And here's me thinking oil paint took, 2 weeks to dry or something. So I should come down to Midway and learn more.
Oil paint does take longer to dry, but when you're outside with the elements, it can dry faster. And the paint can be wet. We have to be very careful when they turn paint in from these competitions because they are wet, but they dry as they hang there. And then you can spray a finish on them too. And it's quite exciting.
Now, I know that you're an artist yourself as well. Do you ever compete? Will you compete this year?
I actually did. I entered, and I entered one main in the main event. And then we do allow artists to submit. If they're in the main event, which they have to be to compete, then they're able to bring in what we call two studio paintings. And those are paintings they may have done last year at another plein air in Utah or somewhere around the country. So it's something they've painted in their studio and is dry for sure.
Okay.
So those are all displayed. We have quite a few of those displayed right now.
Wow. This sounds like a little bit overwhelming, but a lot of fun. For our listeners who aren't artists, how can they get involved and see the art and maybe buy some art?
Yes. Well, I want to thank our many volunteers. As I said, this whole event is volunteer driven, and the whole Midway Art Association, including myself, is volunteer driven. And so we have about 50 to 90 volunteers, and we take as many volunteers as we can get. And because we don't require that you're there so many hours, we just take what you can give. And so a big shout out to our volunteers. They're wonderful. Gail Gorga has been the volunteer coordinator. She's done such a fabulous job. So other than that, we love you to come in and view the art. And it's very of a location that you're familiar with. It just adds such a beautiful element to your house. And we all love living here, whether it's in Park City or Heber or Midway. We love where we live because we live in a very beautiful, special place. And so to capture that on canvas and bring it into the house is an exciting thing to do. We have many, many patrons, and we are so grateful for our consistent patrons who come in and spend thousands of dollars every year. For people that don't want to spend that much, though, art can range anywhere from, you have to consider when pricing art that the frame costs something, the paints cost something, and then the time to create the art costs something. So art can range anywhere from $275, $250, up to thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. We do have a silent auction. So that's exciting for people to come around and put their name in on the many paintings that we have in the silent auction. And that can be a real affordable way to get art. But the other art is equally as affordable when you consider what goes into it.
Yeah, makes
sense. So tomorrow night, starting at 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., that's when our open house happens. And consumers or people in the valleys can start coming in and looking at the paintings and start purchasing them. That runs through July 4th.
Mm-hmm. And that'll be in downtown Midway?
That's at Midway Town Hall, on Main Street. Yep.
Yeah. And just in our last couple of minutes, I want to move on and talk a little bit about the Midway Art Association. I know some of the proceeds from this week's competition and sales go to the Art Association's work. What other things do you do besides the plein air paradise?
We're all about supporting art and supporting artists in the learning of creating art. And so anyone can join the Midway Art Association. I joined 6 years ago as a very, very new artist. That's not true. I probably actually joined about 10 years ago as just having taken my first oil painting class at the Kimball Art Center.
Wow.
And we hold member meetings several months during the year, where we have artists, very experienced artists, demoing. And we do that both on Zoom and in upstairs in our studio in Town Hall, Midway Town Hall. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great community of artists that support each other. We hold workshops throughout the year sometimes. But our big thing is the plein air, because it's such a big event. And, before we're done, I really want to give another great thank you and shout out to our sponsors. We do have wonderful companies and individuals that sponsor a plein air, including the Grand Hyatt, mm-hmm. And then Walmart, CVS, the Center B&B in Heber Valley Railroad, Seuss Cookies, and several framing companies, and then other companies like Gamblin, who is a paint supply company, and Blick. So I just wanted to thank them. But yeah, this is a great organization. We're so friendly. We love artists new and experienced to come in, and everyone learns something in our meetings. So it's a great organization. We have about let's see, we have a little over 100 members, I do believe, but it grows every single year.
Wow, that's great to hear. Well, it sounds like it'll be a really fun and busy week ahead.
It'll be very busy because we're there all day tomorrow, well, from 9 to 9. And then we're there from 8 to 6 o'clock Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then on the 4th of July, we get there nice and early, about 7:15, to stamp the canvases of the artists participating in quick draw. And we finish about 4 o'clock on the 4th.
Wonderful. Well, that is all we have time for today. But Marge, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you, Grace, for the invitation. It's been great to be on.
Thank you. That was Marge Bowen, the co-president of the Midway Art Association.